You are about to enter the pop, pulp, and subcultural minds of several individuals. What may leak into the ether can sometimes be too strange, too confusing for the average human mind. When nerds assemble.
Hello, and welcome to the first Nerds Assemble episode of 2013. It's episode 21, and I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Cookie.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
We've got several things to discuss with you this week, from interesting things about pre-aimed Wii U's, to Twin Peaks, to potential more DLC for Skyrim, to Batgirl updating, and a big feature of this week is a discussion about whether or not non-superhero comic book movies are a bit invisible, actually what is out there, and do we want more of them than non-superhero comic book adaptations. Okay, but first, pre-owned Wii U systems, which can download the previous owner's download purchases for free.
Yay, what a blinding idea. What? I can't understand how they've allowed that to happen.
Yeah, lots of excellent DLC hats for Mario.
Well, I mean, we haven't had this... We haven't had this, like, with the original Wii U, so I can't really imagine...
The original, you mean the Wii?
The original Wii. So, can't imagine what could be so different as to kind of allow this to happen.
Allow it. To me, it seems a big security flaw.
Yeah, it makes you wonder what other information might be lurking after you've done a factory reset. I mean, when they said they were tying download content to particular consoles, they weren't kidding.
Apparently not, no.
Yeah. Which is just a bit kind of...
Although on the plus side, it does mean that if you did have to, for whatever reason, you know...
Do a factory reset,
that you can download your own purchases. But, as long as they obviously
you can do that on the Xbox and PSN, can't you? As long as you've got your original ID and that you can log into.
Yeah.
I think this is a bit... I mean... I wonder how long it's going to take them to realise that maybe they should do something about this, and then what inevitably large update will surface as a result.
It'll be when they walk into game and they'll see pre-owned Wii U here, $99.99, complete with DLC, all checked, working online, no online passes needed.
And everyone will go, oh, a Nintendo system on the internet. I mean, the thing is with this is I'm not sure exactly how similar it is to the Xbox 360 system, because I've said before, Xbox 360 purchases are tied not only to the gamertag they're bought on, but the console they're bought on. So if I was to hypothetically go to a friend's house with my profile on a stick, you know, buy a game on my profile but on his console, he'd still be able to play it while, you know, when I came home, and there would be no issue.
That's right, because you can only have so many systems with that DLC on, can't you?
Yeah. But it's effectively two, because if it's not being played on the console I bought it on, then it has to be logged into live on the profile I bought it on, so it can only have two. Now, with this, I'm not entirely sure, because so far as I know, if you wipe a 360, all that DLC goes.
Mm.
Yeah, it does. You have
to. Yeah, it's no longer attached. So what? How on earth are Nintendo doing it?
I think it's the fact that, say, for instance, so say you've got a pre-owned Wii U, and you went onto one of the stores or whatever online in the Wii U system, and you came across something like is it Trine 2 or something? That's one of the games that's been online, and the previous owner had downloaded that. Then you would come up with something saying whatever would be to sort of re-download it.
Now, you see, that's just a bit mad. That to me shows just how divorced the profile is to the the console ID.
I mean, do you reckon they tie it to the MAC address of the console itself, maybe, or something?
They're doing the arguments about the used games market and how everybody wants to stop it and, you know, they're not getting the money back. This is only going to increase sales in the pre-used market, surely. Because if you know that you can get that DLC content on there. And if they're clever, they are going to find out what's going to be available on there as well, I should think, to help push the sales. It's just going to increase the games and everybody else's pre-used market sales.
But then it's such a gamble.
It is such a gamble, yeah, definitely.
I mean, speaking as someone who, you know, I've built up my computer and console collection by picking up pre-owned systems as well. If there's something good in the collection, I'll get that, and then I've got a spare console, and you know, I've got these games as well. And my God, the taste of people who have these systems a lot of the time is just, oh, Jesus Christ, especially the original Xbox, you know, where you could rip your own music to it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
You actually had this
music on this system and you played it in games. Why would you do that to yourself?
To be fair, you can do that with a 360, though, as well.
Yeah, but
I don't understand why you'd actually want your own music with stuff, because, I mean, when you're playing a video game, the music is part of the atmosphere.
You say that, but some racing games have got atrocious music.
I was going to say, racing games would be an example where having your own music worked quite well. If the music is just there as, here is some music, then fine, replace it. But if you're actually playing a game with a big orchestral... I mean, there's no way I would play through Mass Effect 3 with best 70s disco hits playing in the background.
I don't know. Disco killing.
I was going to say, my biggest guilty pleasure is playing Hawks with the soundtrack from Top Gun.
Yeah, but that makes sense.
Yeah.
Can you imagine, like, Resident Evil with, like, Call Me Maybe or something? Just be like, what?
No, see, wouldn't that improve Resident Evil 6?
I would like to see a Resident Evil 6 fan music video to Call Me Maybe. I think that could work quite well, considering the amount of times they talk into mobile devices Resident Evil 6. Oh, yeah.
50 quid bet right now, someone's got an entire playthrough or a good chunk of the playthrough of Resident Evil 6 on YouTube with Nickelback playing in the background. Because every time I see a game video and someone's put their own music on, it seems to be bloody Nickelback.
Well, to us, I was looking for a walkthrough video for Dishonored the other day, and for a particular chapter, and I was... it was freaking dubstep. And I was just like, why would you? I need to concentrate what you're doing here.
I've just started playing that today, and I must admit, the first thing that I thought, this game needs more dubstep. This doesn't have 200 beats per minute.
Can you imagine how difficult this is wrong. Audio Surf would be with a dubstep track?
I bet somebody's played Audio Surf with a dubstep track or two, and they're probably the kind of people that were already getting insane scores on, I don't know, like J-pop or something. You know.
I'm thinking Audio Surf with the Birdie song.
I think it's at this point that we need to move on to something.
Hang on. I was just going to say going back to the pre-owned Wii U. First, why the hell would there be pre-owned Wii U systems right now? It's only been bloody released.
There are some about, though.
I know there are, and I always see them, and I never understand. If you're going to put down that amount of money on a new system...
Crazy people, too much money.
You know what it is?
What?
Go on.
It's people opening up at Christmas. Wii U system. Oh, what an Xbox 360.
Yeah, so they go and trade in the game for an Xbox 360.
But then wouldn't those be mostly, we got it by mistake, and it would just go back into stock?
Depends if somebody made the mistake of actually opening it up in the first place.
Stuff like that, knowing quite a lot about retail law, if you have, for whatever reason, opened it, or even if you've got, you know, just a shop that's, you know, quite suspicious... Then they'll be like, yeah, well, we can accept it back, but we can only give you less than what you paid for it, type thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Moving on. So this Twin Peaks thing we mentioned. Last week, whilst we were on sort of holiday in that,
while we were passed out drunk.
Yeah, a rumour sort of spread through certain everyone's of internet fandom saying Twin Peaks is coming back. We're here to tell you today, Twin Peaks, not this side of 2015 or whatever, it's not coming back. It's unlikely to come back. It's very unlikely to come back. It's a case of basically a quote one of the co-creators said, which was Mark Frost. Yeah, a quote he said kind of being taken out of context. But basically he kind of said him and David Lynch do, you know, occasionally talk about, you know, Twin Peaks. Yeah. And then somehow this got construed to the idea that there'd been meetings between David Lynch and NBC. About, you know, and it's like, what? Yeah. See,
nowadays, with rumours, there's not even the excuse of, like, you know, Chinese whispers where you mishear things. You know, because that's understandable. It's, you know, one-time event, and if you mishear it, then, you know, you can replicate the wrong information. But nowadays, it's written down. How do you misinterpret stuff that is written down like that?
I just think there's, I mean, I've noticed an increase. I think it's because it's coming up to the 25th anniversary for the series anyway, but there's definitely been an increase in Twin Peaks activity over the last 6 months in terms of stuff that's been going on online. But at the same time, it's like, it's not happening. It's, you know, it's not going to happen. I don't even think you could make, even if it was like a 25 years after the original Twin Peaks, I don't think you could make a TV series that kind of harks back to the original and yet is understandable for a lot of audiences these days.
It was of its time.
I mean, one of the things is that Twin Peaks was, you know, the name of the place.
Yeah.
As well. So, I mean, to have, you know, something set in the same town, that would still be a bit, you know, I could understand it if they were to, I don't know, somehow spin off the story. So I, admittedly, I haven't, you know, seen to the end of Twin Peaks yet. So we don't know what happens to the FBI agent, whether he, you know, is still alive or whatnot. But I mean, you might be able to kind of spin off from the specific FBI agent.
I mean, you say that, but I mean, a lot of the kids that were kids or teenagers in the series now are essentially parents, maybe in some instances. I'm not sure if they'd necessarily, I can't do maths at the moment, they'd necessarily have kids that are of a similar age to what was in the show. But anyway, I'm just saying that it'd be kind of weird doing a continuation and it doesn't need it.
A spin-off series called Single Peak.
Triple Peaks.
So the big news for this week is that there's no rumblings of Twin Peaks.
Well, there's no real true rumblings. It's like you know, it's like just tiny sort of magnitude tremors that aren't actually the precursor to an earthquake. It's just natural stuff happening. It's that kind of thing. Unless, of course, you know, Dante's Peak was actually, you know, partially correct about those sorts of things leading to something big. But
Dante's Peak was a lot of things, but yeah.
But
Disney will buy the rights for it by the end of the year.
Yes, clearly.
Suddenly Twin Peaks becomes a ground for Iron Man and Luke Skywalker.
Well, I mean, if you consider the heavy...
He'll be there talking to the coffee as Luke's talking to Darth Vader.
Well, I mean, the trees that they've got around there is perfect for another battle between the likes of Iron Man, Thor, and Captain America. Clearly, you know, there's a little pine, a little redwood. It'd be fine. It'd be fine.
Yeah.
Two things. One, I was thinking, you know, it could be a bit Alan Wake.
Yeah.
So they could do something like that if they were going to, which they aren't. And another thing is, you know, with Paul saying everything's, you know, written down, so how, you know, how can you possibly make that mistake? Reading comprehension. I mean, all you have to do is look at almost any forum on the internet or comments, you know, the bottom half of the internet, and you can just see how people, even with something laid out in black and white right in front of them in perfectly constructed English, they can still get not only that, you know, they can get the wrong end of the wrong stick.
In fact, it was actually 12 sticks over to the right, and then sort of like maybe north a little bit more.
It's like, dude, what are you doing over there? I've got the stick here.
Wave the stick of truth.
Yeah, it's like, no, it's this. And
Actually, isn't that the title of the South Park game that's coming out, Stick of Truth?
Yes, I believe so. And mind you, that wasn't that being developed by THQ? Or they were publishing?
Wasn't it meant to be the last game that they were doing, because it was pretty much complete anyway?
Oh, and...
Somebody with the internet!
Did you hear about the legal issues that have gone on with THQ?
Yes, the fact that the sort of quick sale's been halted, and now stuff's been... or whatever insolvency thing they were doing, and now stuff kind of like, right, we're going to sell it off piecemeal, which that broke just before we started recording.
Yeah, it's basically that some of the investors have said, hang on, couldn't we possibly get more instead of just selling the whole thing off as big lump deal? If we just close everything down, thus stopping development, excellent, thank you very much, that's very helpful, and then sell off individual IPs and things like that to interested buyers. And it's like, yeah, you can possibly get more, but it screws everything up, just stop.
Imagine somebody buying the rights to Yidraw. I don't think that's going to happen.
So, well, hang on. I think I've got about 17 pence in my pocket. Let's see. I've been a bid.
You've already been outbid by Neil Buchanan for his Art Attack comeback.
Oh, mind you, it does make me think about some of the more... I mean, who... Because THQ published it, Draw to Life?
Yeah,
that was THQ publishing that. And it makes me wonder what would happen with something like that. Because, well, while I disliked the Wii, I think I only played one Wii game. I'm not sure if they released more than one. But
I think they did a sequel on the DS. But...
Yeah, it was originally on DS, and the DS games were amazing. And the storyline was absolutely bloody harrowing by the end of the second game. So it makes me wonder what they do, things like that. But everyone else is going, Saints Row and stuff. And it's like, I read one blog post Dark Side, but one blog post that said that, Saints Row is never compared to GTA. And it's like, well, no, Saints Row never sold the numbers that GTA did, but it still did very well for what it was. I would say it is things like Yidraw and Red Faction that kind of...
Yeah, the latest Red Faction, which even had a movie. Does anyone remember that?
What?
Really?
No.
What?
Yeah, it had a movie. Sci-Fi Channel.
Oh, my Lord.
Oh, Sci-Fi Channel.
That sums it up nicely, doesn't it? Oh. Everyone's reaction there. Like, what, a movie? Oh, it's Sci-Fi Channel. That doesn't count. It's not.
Did it have John Hurt in?
I do not know.
He seems to be popping up in all sorts of random, kind of sci-fi type shows, including, I think, on the Sci-Fi Channel as well.
I will just say... I know it exists. I've not seen it because it's a Sci-Fi Channel movie and they're crap. But I know it exists, and it was just... What? Hang on, what? There's a trailer? Hang on, why are they doing a live-action trailer for a game? Oh, that's for a film? Oh, I'm not watching that. It looks terrible.
I think we're beginning to get to the bottom of perhaps some of the poor decisions that may have been made, may have led to THQ's current situation.
Yes, it's only they thought the latest Red Faction game was going to be a huge hit.
I admit that Paul and I have got... Is that Red Faction Armageddon?
Yes.
Yes, I do own. I have played it, and it was all right. The game was.
Paul and I have got a copy of it sitting on a shelf that I picked up just after they stopped printing the discs. And we haven't played on it yet, but one of the reasons we bought it was because there's some co-op going on, or sort of multiplayer on the same system. So
I've not tried the co-op, but the game itself is all right. It's not as Guerrilla.
It's not like,
but it,
okay.
Yeah, it's a nice enough game, but it's got sort of B game written all over it.
Okay.
It was never going to be.
Moving on to something that's more of a rumor than THQ's what's going to happen with them, or sort of like Twin Peaks. Parallel to the Twin Peaks rumour and then been snuffled out. This one hasn't been snuffled out yet. Redguard, next DLC for Skyrim.
Woo!
That's the rumour that started cycling about again last week in terms of game circles. this was perhaps not as amazing as the Walking Dead Survival Instinct video incident, which we will not discuss here, but it will just be mentioned. But in terms of rumours that haven't been shut down, this hasn't been shut down yet, but this is only because ZeniMax or whatever renewed the trademark for Redguard. And then I was reading an article on the official Xbox Magazine website for the UK, and it was kind of like, oh yeah, one of our readers or whatever, or commenters, is like, oh yeah, well, there's a place in, you know, in the Elder Scrolls universe, in Tamriel, called Dragonstar, which is like a disputed territory on the Skyrim kind of Redguard homeland border or whatever. And it's just kind of like, could be the next DLC. Maybe. But I don't know, guys.
And wasn't there someone who was, ooh, I may possibly be an insider, but I can't give much information, and he was listing some of the things that they were going to be coming out with, and I think this was mentioned. Redguard was mentioned.
Yeah, it was. I mean, there's a lot more proper rumour to it than the Twin Peaks stuff, to be fair.
To be honest, I think that if they were going to use anything Redguard-y, it would not necessarily be... I mean, they've just renewed the trademark, so they've still got an option on it. Yeah, they don't have to re-register or anything. That if they were going to, you know, either for something to do with the MMO that's coming out.
Boo!
Something to do with that, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say it could be something to do with that, but I just want to continue living in willful ignorance of it, that existing.
Yeah, I would...
there's an MMO?
Yeah, yeah, on the way. Elder Scrolls Online. It's a thing.
Oh, right, okay.
It shouldn't be, but there you go.
Yeah, I'm not personally fair, but I would. The reason I would go that maybe Redguard could perhaps be to do the MMO instead of DLC for Skyrim is because it's that sort of territory. I mean, we're talking more kind of like a desert, kind of Middle Eastern kind of feel to the home of the Redguards in theory. Plus, there was previously some weird Elder Scrolls game that had Redguard as a subtitle. But that's old and I have no idea what may or may not have happened in it. But anyway, you know, they're sort of, you know, they've got that kind of land. And I'm just thinking, if I was making a great big MMO and I wanted to have snowy place, moderate place, and deserty place, which is, you know, kind of what a lot of RPGs in general tend to do.
I was thinking it's really setting itself apart so far.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's very different from the kind of territories in Skyrim. So I would have thought that if they renewed it, then maybe, and they were thinking of using it in the near future, that it would be for the MMO, not Skyrim. Yeah. But that's just my theory.
It's a possibility, isn't it? As you say, it could just be them wanting to make sure that everything is in order and it's not going to, you know, there aren't going to be any breaks being put on, because the last thing they want, if they're chucking money at developing not only DLC, and they're probably working on the next Elder Scrolls game anyway, simply because these take so damn long, and the MMO, they're just wanting to make sure that everything is right and there's not going to be anyone bailing.
Okay, next bit of news for the week. And actually, this isn't news from last week. This broke just before Christmas. Obviously, we were on break, and I wanted to come back to it because we talked about it before Christmas. Gail Simone is back on Batgirl.
Yay!
Yay!
Sorry. Delayed.
She sort of broke the news between her Twitter account and Tumblr just before Christmas. It's like, you know, like, guess what? Yeah, she's back, you know, back on Batgirl. I mean, I think there's going to be like a brief break of maybe about 2 or 3 issues, maybe, or they're in a, or trying to wrangle something where she is doing those. But anyway, she's definitely going up to the current run that she's doing around February, March, and then there may be a break or whatever, and then she's back. But it looks like DC might have paid attention to the slight public outcry about over how she was dismissed from the series and the fact that she was dismissed at all, considering her popularity as a writer on it. So, yeah, Gail's back.
I mean, it still doesn't excuse the fact that, you know, they did that in the first place. I mean, not only got rid of her, but the method as well. It's like, oh, yeah, by the way, ta-ra.
Mm. Yeah.
It's just, oh, come on.
I mean, I think this is part of the... I mean, people seem to think that, like, a lot of the comics writers for the, you know, big ones, so DC and Marvel, really, are, like, properly in-house. But actually, as far as I can tell, a lot of the writers and artists are actually kind of freelancers, just depending on your experience, depends on how much you get paid, essentially. But that, maybe I'm wrong, but that might be why they thought they could just, you know, easily dismiss her via electronic mail. Because of the whole sort of freelance element that could potentially be there. But like I said, I'm not entirely sure if she's in-house or freelance. But it's just good she's back. It was just the fact that that came off of the back of the whole thing at Vertigo with, I can't remember her name now, editor for years, pretty much helped the whole, you know, helped the editorial grow.
Her stepping down. Yeah, that's completely disappeared out of my head too.
Yeah. It was just the fact they had those two stories. It's like, oh god, is DC suddenly kind of going anti-woman creator or something? Which would be quite bad.
Someone stupid.
Yeah. It's an issue.
Hey, these people have helped get, you know, get all the success that we're currently enjoying. Let's get rid of them.
Yeah. I've never understood that sort of way of thinking. But yes, okay, so Gail Simone's back on Batgirl. There may or may not be a tiny, tiny sort of hiatus between issues as to her actually being responsible for the writing, but she's probably back. Okay, moving on, and we're getting to talk about that made me want to talk about this week, which is, I was listening to an episode of Geek Nation's Comics Chicks, episode 9. Yes, I do listen to other podcasts.
You've been seeing other podcasts.
Yeah.
That's it, I want a divorce.
In this one, which was admittedly, like, they finally released, like, the test podcast they'd done, it was Kate Kotler, who's the show's main presenter, talking with Joan Hilty, who's formerly editor for DC and Vertigo, and she does other stuff now. And they were discussing non-superhero comics don't tend to get adaptations into film, at least as far as they could tell. They couldn't name any during the bit of the episode where they talked about this. And I want to talk about it today because I want to show that, A, there are non-superhero comic book adaptations out there in the world. And also to discuss whether, actually, in a way, we would like to see more, because last year, in terms of comic book movies, it was all superheroes, all kind of branches of that subgenre. Yeah. So I think if we just sort of go around a minute and just kind of name, perhaps, an adaptation that we know of that is comic book based, but it's not superhero. So I'm going to start, and I'm going to go with Road to Perdition.
Okay, I'm going to go with Tank Girl.
Anyone else?
I'm going to go with 300.
Now, does this have to be film?
It has to be film. Just because that's what they were aiming at.
Okay. Well, the most obvious of the ones I've seen would be, say, something like Tank Girl.
Well, Paul said Tank Girl. If I was going to go for some more, because we've got a little list here on our outline. So we've got Road to Perdition, A History of Violence, Persepolis, though that's kind of boring a bit because obviously that's an animation. 30 Days of Night, at least the original, has no one that you could count as a superhero in that. Ghost World.
Yeah.
Tango, obviously. And From Hell, because certainly in the comic, not in the comic, but in the film, there's a lack of true powers going on.
Just as a matter of interest, Japanese comic books like Akira and Battle Royale, were they comic books before they were films, or was it the other way around?
Akira was.
Yeah, Akira was a manga before it was an anime. I can never remember if Battle Royale... Because there's a manga, there's actually novels, and there's actually the films. And I know the films come at the latter end, but I can never remember if it was the manga or the novels that came first. Something for some to find out sometime. I can never remember which came first in that particular thing. But no, as we've just named here, there are comic book movies out there that are based on superheroes.
Yeah.
I'm actually surprised that... because Kate Cutler writes for like Bleeding Cool and stuff on comics, and obviously a former DC Vega that can name any comic book films that weren't superheroes.
I think part of the problem is tracing stuff back to its origin is very difficult. Say, for example, like Batman and Superman, obviously they stem from the comic books. Everybody knows that.
Yeah.
But other stuff, you kind of watch a film and you go, oh, that was a pretty good film. Then you don't really think about, you know, what it comes from. Did it come from a graphic novel? Did it come from a regular novel? Did it come from a serial? You know, what?
I mean, I would say, unlike maybe regular novels, graphics and comics tend not to be always referred to in the adaptation because people don't think, due to the format not being taken as seriously, they don't think there's any sale opportunities. Whereas something like, I think, oh God, was it when Atonement came out and everyone was also talking about the Blimmin novel, which is adapted from, to stuff like that. And obviously, whenever there's a Blimmin sort of Jane Austen adaptation, people start talking about the novel that it's normally based on.
But I mean, even stuff like Garfield, I mean, wasn't Garfield, you know, one of those...
Well, technically it's a comic strip, for the newspaper comic strip.
Yeah, I mean, that's evolved into a film somehow.
Yeah.
Whether it's good or not is a different matter.
I would say, from a professional, I have a younger brother who's watched them opinion, and I had sometimes watched them with him. The first two films of Garfield were absolutely fine. I wouldn't trust the one that's about them sort of being CGI creatures that basically, like, the cartoon world ends up in the human world and, oh, it's... Just don't watch the third one. The ones where they try to mix kind of, like, Garfield-like cat with real people works far better.
I've only seen clips of that and it's like, oh, God, it's... No.
To be honest, it's hard finding good children's films these days. But back to comic book or graphic novel adaptations. They're out there. I mean, if we were going to add to the non-superhero slant on this, we've got the Frank Miller ones, you know, your Sin Cities and your 300s, because there's not really any superpowers there, just hyper-masculinity. Something altogether, and I've yet to hear my hyper-masculinity named as a superhero power or a supervillain power.
No, but I think it would be interesting to name it as a film genre, or, you know, just a general genre.
I think it has, though, with like stuff like, you know, your older 80s action flicks like Commando.
Because those are classed as hard body films by the academics, but I wouldn't necessarily say that, you know, stuff like Sin City was necessarily hard body.
No, it's definitely hyper-masculine. It's like this weird masculine ideal. But these are comics and stuff that have been adapted, and there's no superheroes. I mean, I suppose if you wanted to stretch it a little bit... Actually, no, I'm not going to do that, no. I was thinking maybe you could include Constantine in that, but no, because then you'd have to include Batman, and then we're ruined. So no.
I mean, if you include Batman... What are we defining as superheroes? Because, I mean,
I'm thinking more people with powers and maybe seemingly extra human abilities.
So to me, Constantine wasn't your typical run-of-the-mill superhero.
Certainly not in the film. I mean, it's just the fact that he's still got the kind of the power thing. But then is it? I mean, if you went from hell, there's the kind of the sort of psychic thing that's going on, but it's not major. It's not.
He gets that through, well, at least in the film, he gets that through smoking opiates, doesn't he?
So
I think part of the problem seems to be, you know, the whole thing of, you know, do they have powers or not? Are they, is it a superhero adaptation or not? And are things going to be identified as comic adaptations, even if they are adapted from comics, simply because they're not superheroes, is because of the... American obsession with superheroes, and that's what comics are characterized as.
I mean, I suppose
when they're not, they're just a medium.
I suppose that's the thing. I mean, the success of obviously like Batman and Avengers last year means that in terms of the adaptations that we will be seeing in the near future, it will probably be more sort of like superheroes, basically. And obviously, you know, the sequels to the pre-Avengers films, like. I mean, is Iron Man 3? Iron Man 3's out this year, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's already starting. You know, that's going to be, I think, May, if I remember correctly.
I'm barely aware of anything going on.
But while I was researching stuff to do this bit, Paul gave me a Wikipedia list that was sort of a list of films based on English language comics. Crazy thing, Monkey Bone is based on this random comic series, a short run series. Obviously the entry for Monkey Bone, the film on Wikipedia, quite extensive. The entry for this comic, very short. But that's what they're claiming, and I was just kind of like, kind of see it.
And something that also came to mind there, Men in Black.
Yes.
Super villains, but not superheroes. Yeah.
Yep.
I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, you know, complaining about, you know, kind of a medium that does film, you know, that kind of blossoms into film. Wasn't Pirates of the Caribbean based on a ride?
Theme park ride.
Yeah, theme park ride.
One of the Disney worlds.
So.
Yeah. It just surprised me that those two couldn't think of any. We've obviously thought of several. I'm trying to think if I can think of any more. I'm looking at our film collection across the room. I'm just kind of like.
I mean, I think part of the problem is part of the. You know, what...
Tell us from the crypt. But yeah.
Okay.
I think you do have to have a solid definition of what they want to class as superheroes, I suppose.
But I think one of the things that you've got to think about is, you know, why are we kind of questioning this? And, you know...
In terms of what one thing I'd say is that if I was going to get away properly from the superhero genre, because the thing is sort of like about something like, say, Sin City, is things are still a bit fantastical. You know, things are not quite real. I wouldn't mind seeing some more that seems to be based in reality. You know, there's plenty of graphics out there, like sort of biographical ones, or sort of non-fiction ones, or sort of like fiction ones, but they're vaguely based on reality. That basically you could do. So obviously, more things like Road to Perdition, A History of Violence, and Ghost World. I would like to see more stuff like that actually adapted. Actually, just think about it. Is Scott Pilgrim a superhero? He's not, is he?
No.
But he's not. Technically, it's a comic book adaptation.
Yes.
But with elements of the fantastical.
But I don't know. Does it work the other way around? I mean, is there any films that were, you know, kind of superhero that have kind of gone into other mediums?
Not sure. I just want to bring up the thing of Kick-Ass. I would still class Kick-Ass slightly as a whole superhero thing because of the fact that Kick-Ass feels a limited amount of pain because of what happens to him.
It wasn't really a superpower, was it? It was just the fact that he got his ass kicked.
Well, to be honest, I mean, Batman's technically, if you're going to sort of... the whole point is superhero. A superhero doesn't necessarily mean superpowered.
I was going to say that... I think probably the border, or you know, if you want, you know, the border of the superhero genre would be something like Batman, or the, you know, the recent Batman films, because I don't think anyone actually has superpowers in those at all, do they?
No, Nolan's tried to make it.
It's all what you're going to define with it, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, they're all sorts of versions of. He's got a hyper version of combat vigilante training, that kind of thing. You've got characters who have got sort of hyper realized versions of its personality and psychoses and, you know, all those kinds of things. So it's sort of reality plus. instead of you know, someone dressing in black and going out and, you know, beating up the bad guys, it's someone dressing, you know, in a costume, which is black, and going out and, you know, beating up bad guys.
Yeah.
It's that kind of thing, I suppose.
I think it comes down to people's own personal opinions of what their own definition of superheroes is as well. Because, I mean, some people will, you know, say that superheroes are with superpowers.
Yeah.
And others will you know, have that board lined up.
I mean, if you're thinking about generic conventions, one of the main features of a superhero is that he protects his identity using some sort of mask. So, you know, Kick-Ass would fit in well with that.
That's about the only trope that Batman goes in for.
I would say, I would also say vigilante-esque activity, because almost none of them are operating within the law.
True. Yes, it's the sort of off the book justice.
Yes.
Ooh.
What?
Technically.
All right.
Judge Dredd. He is the law. Come on.
Yes.
I'd class Dredd more as a sci-fi, dystopian sci-fi than superhero.
But the idea is it's a comic book adaptation. Yeah. So,
it is a comic book adaptation, yes.
So, and it's a non-superhero. So there's another one, Dredd. Another one to add to the list. Doesn't involve superheroes. Well, no, it does, technically, because Anderson.
But again, that's why I'd class it more as sci-fi.
Yeah.
Yes, they do have mutants and such, but it's... I still wouldn't class it as a superhero. Dredd is more of a sci-fi.
Okay, and that would mean that we'd still be happy enough including things like adaptations that weren't about superheroes, like the original 30 Days of Night adaptation, and From Hell.
Yeah, I mean they are more genre type. I mean that's the whole thing. The American industry seems to have this big thing of comics equals superhero. It's a bit like saying, no, you know, the written word in a store is equal Penny Dreadful.
Or it's a bit like...
Or Chicklet, you know, that kind of thing. You know, TV equals game show.
Yeah. Games equals first-person shooter.
Yes, it's like they don't have to be, just because those are the only ones that you've seen.
I would say that the place that gets the most variety, going back to mentioning Akira and all that earlier, it is certainly Japan, because their manga industry is far more widespread and sort of like not defined by genre as the American industry is. And obviously they do get live action adaptations. I mean, for instance, you know, so you've got your battle royales, but also stuff like Death Note has had live action films, but that's based on manga.
Not quite as open to the whole manga as just a vehicle for stories as you would like to believe. You know, the whole otaku thing.
If
you're deeply into your things, then you know there's still the whole geeks nerd.
The difference is that in Japan, as far as I've understood, manga itself, which is the comics. That's why I've read, because you get manga for housewives, you get manga for businessmen. It's the anime.
I agree there. I mean, they have a far better attitude. They don't have a presumption that if something's a comic, you know.
Yeah.
It's like over here, if something's a comic, it's for kids.
Yeah.
Except maybe maybe the Costa Book Awards will change people's opinions about that recently.
But it's the whole thing of Japan is more open to the entire idea. It's like European comics industry is more open to the sci-fi comics, I think. So Europe sci-fi comics, America superhero comics, Japan far more sort of varied, but that they still have their own tropes that they go in for.
Do you think that basically, because obviously graphic novels are, much like comics and films, they're a visual media, do you reckon that actually influences people's perceptions on where, things originate? Because, I mean, obviously, if you've got based on a regular novel, like Stephen King films and whatnot, obviously they're like literally just kind of words on a page rather than, graphic novels, which could be classed as almost like a storyboard.
I think it helps. Because I've got, I know people who really dislike the idea that Watchmen is classed as a graphic novel because it was originally serialized.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm quite happy with something can be retroactively a graphic novel, like Sandman.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic, or Cerebus. things like that. They can, you know, they can be collected together. They can be graphic novels because it, comic has too much baggage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why the Cornwall Graphic Novel Group is called the Cornwall Graphic Novel Group. Because if we called it like the Cornwall Comics Group or the Cornwall Comics and Graphic Novel Group, apart from the fact that it's a mouthful, it just doesn't sound as serious. Because of
Graphic novel can be more inclusive.
Yeah.
And it has less baggage. A graphic novel is, you know, it's a bigger read, but something can that can be presented graphically. Whereas comic, as soon as you say comic to the general population, they will instantly think Zap, Pow,
Kapow,
or, you know, Dennis the Menace.
Yeah, I was just about to say it could also be you know, the risk of confusion. Cornwall Graphic Novel Group is specifically about graphic novels. Cornwall Comic Group could actually be about, you know, stand-up comedy.
Hey, there's a lot of stand-up comedy down there, and I don't want to get mixed up with that lot. Yeah, dodgy lot, them lot.
Although,
they might be
although
listening.
People would probably say, you know, comedy group or, you know, something like that. But yeah, it's the whole baggage thing.
Yeah.
And again, that's why some films, like when Road to Perdition came out, I very rarely saw any reference to the fact that it was based on a graphic novel.
Mm.
No.
I saw mention of the original author, the original book, things like that, but only one or two mentions of graphic novel. And again, you could almost tell the, yeah, we're not really wanting to say this because it, you know, people will instantly just go, you know, throw their arms up and, you know, not be interested.
But going back to one of my original questions, would we like to see less, I mean, we don't want to see less adaptations, but would we like to see less superhero ones and maybe some of the ones that aren't so genre-tied being given the limelight? Just a bit
well, in my opinion, you know, well, the limelight kind of says it all, but I mean, you shouldn't kind of want to have less of like anything, to be honest.
Well, also,
you know, in terms of like,
more. It's not less of one thing; it's more variety, more of everything else to sort of even up a little bit. Because there are great things being done in comics and graphic novels, whether they're self-published or whether they're from, you know, big publishers. There are good things. If only DC would pay attention to that with Vertigo and not bloody relaunching things like Constantine. But, you know, all those kinds of things, it's just, you've got that source material there. For good God's sake, just do something with it. You can see, it doesn't have to be a film. If you want to do something, you know, a bit lower budget, look at the success of Walking Dead.
Mm. So I do question how much the film...
It doesn't have to be a big, you know, big summer blockbuster film. It can be something, you know, that's... done in smaller chunks.
Could be a mini series.
Yes,
definitely.
Mini series
like Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones.
That'll be back soon. Yay!
We have yet to watch season one, but it's sitting there on a shelf.
Yeah.
Waiting, anticipating.
But, I mean,
it's awesome.
You know, if you're looking outside of the medium of films, you know, there's obviously The Darkness as well.
Yeah, I mean, Darkness has managed to. They'd be quite good on a sort of video game format situation. Yes. Though I might be the only person who really liked to. I'm not sure yet.
I'm sure you're not literally the only person to like the second game.
I hope so. I do. But I think... So basically to kind of... Not retort, but just to answer back to Kate and Ms. Hilty, that there are adaptations out there that aren't about superheroes.
Sometimes you have to go outside of the whole, you know, DC.
And potentially the Hollywood machine to an extent, because, I mean, Ghost World wasn't exactly a top, but it's got a bit, it had a bit of a more indie involvement in terms of production.
Well, it did to a certain extent, because, I mean, it depends how you define indie. Because, I mean, obviously...
the size of the studio involved.
Yeah, but by the same token, I mean, I know it was at the beginning of a career, but Scarlett Johansson was in there.
True.
Thora Birch, Steve Buscemi.
Yeah, you know, but Buscemi likes being in random stuff, man. He's not quite at, Nicolas Cage levels of random, but I could see it in the future, the Buscemi reaching those levels of random.
I'm sure that Nicolas Cage, in his approach to films seems to be someone wandering into a restaurant and walking over to people who are already eating and saying, "What's that? Can I have some?"
Didn't I show you a video on YouTube about Nicolas Cage's agent, you know, just kind of being like,
"Oh yeah,
hey,
yeah,
so we've got this you know, random thing. I'll do it. Sounds good."
Yeah.
Okay, I think that's all we've really got time for this week. Again, well, I don't think we've said, but I hope you guys are having a lovely new year so far. So it is goodbye from...
good night from me, Paul Wood. I'm Super Retroid on Twitter and Retroid at Eurogamer.com.
And it's good night from me, Paul, aka OneArmed_Cookie on Twitter. And you can also find me lurking around thegamejar.com.
Okay, it's good night from me, Paul Blewett. I have a Twitter, Paul Blewett.
Yeah.
And I have a website, www.paul-blewett.com.
Yes, and it's a good night from me, Emily King. You can find me on Twitter at ek6891. You can stop by my website if you want, which is ek-creations.com. Just a heads up, we've got Peter Cooper coming back next week.
Woo-hoo!
To talk about many fabulous things, including, get this, his replica Halo Warthog and other replica Halo goodness. So you should really start thinking about questions to ask him, because he knows stuff, man.
Cosplayer's wet dream.
This Warthog, it does move. So yes, questions and stuff. Anyway, you can find us, Nerd Assemble Team, over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. We're also on iTunes. You can find us also looking around gamesfiends.com with your post. We're on Twitter at Nerds Podcast, plus we're on Facebook at Nerds Assemble Podcast. We're on Google Plus, Nerds Assemble Podcast. That is it. Good night.
Night.
Good night.